Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
So, journey one. I am an aging poster girl for the happy integration of atheism, humanism, and Unitarianism. It's an unlikely outcome for the granddaughter of, on mom's side, an Episcopal priest in London, and on dad's side, Northern Baptist ministers. Missionaries in India for their lifetime. But they all died when I was young, so they didn't witness my long, heartfelt journey away from God. I had an every Sunday congregationalist childhood in cozy Chicago suburb. Weekly church was simply a pattern that we followed. When I was 10, I believed my adorable cat had gone to heaven with my grandfather to live with God. But sadly, much religion remains at that level. I was incredibly fortunate to have loving and hardworking and caring parents. I gained my ethics really by osmosis from them. When I was 13, though, my church sent me to the Youth for Christ movement in Chicago. I found their marching and wailing, really, and testifying to Christ so repellent that I left. Soon after, I witnessed the same thing, seemingly unhinged behavior, on television when Billy Graham would do his crusades every year. This was not my Christianity. So what was? As a teenager, I learned again what I was not. I dated, among others, a devout Catholic and an Orthodox Jew, and attended services with them. But these and other exposures to differentness were important in the opening up to a wider world. When I headed off to college, I was nearly breathless with anticipation. I was eager for every scintilla of learning that I could glean. I majored in history and literature with a strong minor in biology. My world was a continuous exposure to profound ideas and beautiful language. I learned to analyze wide-ranging ideas and to defend my opinion with evidence. Meanwhile, I was dissecting fetal pigs and cats and studying the microcosm of cells. The incredible value of a humanistic education is our exposure to all manner of alternative worldviews. By contrast, conventional faith seemed to me a repetition of the same answers to my expanding questions. In case this sounds like an endlessly charmed life, I must turn to an interim period after my sophomore year in college, which changed the meaning of everything to me. I interrupted college to marry my sweetheart, who was 5 years older, and he had been drafted into the army in Germany after grad school. At night, over the Atlantic Ocean, the engines in my plane caught fire, and we dove downward into chaos. The pilots regained enough control to level us out and to stop the fires, but our plane had gone down to just a few thousand feet above the ocean, and we rattled our way to the closest land, which was Newfoundland in February. We bellied in on the ice and waited over 24 hours for help. That trauma became imprinted on my neurons. Once I got to Europe, village life was marvelous, and we traveled everywhere. However, like my plane flight, there came a series of awful events that changed my life. As we were touring in Austria, a semi-trailer coming downhill toward us became unhinged and smashed headlong into the car in front of us. So we shook with horror as we went to help five dying people who had just exploded out of that car. Then I learned that my childhood girlfriend and her mom and her dad had all been shot to death by her jealous high school boyfriend. 2 days after we returned to the States, our best man was blown up in a gas explosion, leaving his young wife and baby daughter. At his funeral, I overheard two women talking, and one said, "It must be God's will," and the other one replied, "Yes, God needed Larry." It was too much. I wanted to attack them both for such mindless, idiotic, infantile interpretations of life and death and God and religious faith. For a while, I went crazy. I'm sure most of you have experienced such a crossroad when you first encounter big death. The accumulation of so much danger and death in 1 year overwhelmed me. The religious training of my youth proved useless. I entered a nearby college, now determined to confront my own supposed faith, as well as finish my degree. I wanted to seriously study the Old and New Testament and Christian history, looking for answers to death. I went through an exegesis of every biblical book with tough professors, learning the different contexts in which each book was written. I wrestled with God through those years, and the fact is, much of great literature involves people's struggle to understand God. Parts of the Bible were inspirational, but I hate to say it's much too full of magical thinking, from prehistory to hold my allegiance. Finally, it was the new science that led me into a vast new comprehension of life and the universe. And by my mid-20s, I realized that the laws of physics and chemistry determine our life and death, not God. This recognition came to me very quietly, without existential terror, probably because my life had been so suffused with profound reading and love. I saw that all the horrors I had witnessed were due to human collisions with natural laws that control our universe without even a nod to faith or human worth. Natural law prevails for good people and bad, impervious to all prayers or supplication for godly intercession. Imagining God was our early attempt to get help in steering our course through nature's indifference. I went on to graduate school and taught English, no surprise. I remarried, had a wonderful son. We participated with our friends in the adventures of the 60s and onward, while building our homes together, raising families, and pursuing our careers. Our discussions then were about Vietnam, evolution, genetics, and marriage. Ultimately, I changed careers and became a filmmaker and motivational speaker for the state and city of New York, and traveled all over the country. I have been an atheist for a very long time, thanks to those years of mind-bending reading and discussion. Only science and literature together brought me peace. After 40 years in two careers, I retired and became executive director of the Capital District Humanist Society in upstate New York. Finally, I moved to New Jersey, of all things, to live near my kids. We all visited this society in 08 and heard Sarah Lammert speak. That did it. We joined, and I've become a thoroughly involved Unitarian ever since. This is my home. Thanks so much.
I was raised in a Reformed Jewish household on the south side of Chicago. My recollection is that my parents did not belong to any synagogue. We had a family friend who gave me swimming lessons and who was affiliated with Beth Am Temple. And I asked my parents if we could get involved. And my next memory is finding out that I didn't enjoy the religious education program. But by then, it was too late. My folks wouldn't unjoin. I attended Hebrew school, became friendly with Rabbi Friedland, and I even had his son as a counselor at a day camp one summer. I'm not sure I believed anything, but I sure memorized a lot of Hebrew. And I was allowed to chant the Kiddush one Friday night at the adult service. I went to temple on all the holidays, helped out regularly in the temple's office, and there were a number of adults in the congregation who assumed I'd become a rabbi. For me, Beth Am was a way to interact with adults. I had a difficult relationship with my father, and my mother was ill. When I was around 5 or 6, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. She was treated with radiation and surgery. In those days, 5 years was seen as the magic number. If you lasted 5 years without a recurrence, you'd probably be okay. My mother's cancer returned as bone cancer almost exactly 5 years after she'd completed her previous treatment. She spent a year in a body cast and died not too long before my bar mitzvah. Shortly after that, my grandpa Kramer, an observant conservative Jew, was diagnosed with brain cancer, and he died 6 weeks later. I remember going to my Hebrew school teacher and telling him that I thought no one in my family would be alive for my bar mitzvah. Alarmed, he whisked me off to see Rabbi Friedland. I don't even remember the words of the conversation, only the feeling that I got no solace from this congregation in which I'd been so active. After my bar mitzvah, I began to feel there was no reason for me to go to temple anymore. I didn't believe in the Jewish God, for that matter, in any God, and I felt that attending temple was hypocritical. With the exception of a few funerals and weddings and a stop at a San Francisco synagogue to hear the pipe organ at an Oregon Historical Society tour, I've not been back in temple since. I couldn't quite call myself an atheist, though I probably was, so I chose the term agnostic, feeling like it might be less threatening to friends who were believers. I was at least seeking. I tried Quaker meeting at Swarthmore College, a Quaker school I attended, and I went to Episcopal services occasionally with my college girlfriend. Later, with good friends, I attended Presbyterian services. Mary, my wife, used to refer to me as pre-Presbyterian. And that was because I loved the music. I studied pipe organ with the organist at a Presbyterian church. I found great musical beauty in the Presbyterian services, and while I sometimes mouthed the words of the spoken prayers in those services, I did not believe in what they, and indeed what I, was saying. Returning to the chronology, Mary, who had drifted away from church for very different reasons, she and I were married at the Unitarian Church in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The woman UU minister who married us actually learned a little sign language so Mary's mother could better participate. But we were both in a place where we had no desire to join a congregation. We moved to Ridgewood and raised our son here. We had a number of friends in Ridgewood who were members of USR. In retrospect, if we had joined this congregation much earlier, I think our transition to New Jersey would have been far easier. It was Maggie Shoemaker who finally convinced Mary to start coming to services here. Mary was moved by Mybritt Johnson's talks, and I started attending early in Sarah Lammert's tenure. At that time, there was much struggle with language at USR. Sarah, a theist, questioned congregants who were uncomfortable with words like church, him, and of course God. At this point in my life, I'm fine with him. I can almost say we're going to church on Sunday, but I am uncomfortable with any mention of God in our services. Talking about God is not who I am. When I was in high school, I didn't know whether I wanted to be a physicist or an electrical engineer. In an unhappy, uncertain childhood, the scientific method and the empirical search for truth provided an intellectual center. Newton's laws were refined by the work of Einstein, and I guess I've always felt that if we search diligently and systematically for long enough, we will find answers. As someone who studied economics, psychology, and sociology in graduate school, I doubt there will ever be an Ohm's law of human behavior. But we have to keep searching and testing. To me, saying that God ultimately controls all, or accepting a deity based on the wonder behind the physical and living world, to me, it feels like a cop-out. I'm not asking anyone at USR to give up their own spiritual or religious beliefs, but I'm requesting that we not make a spiritual or God-centered belief system the core of our USR experience. To do that excludes some of us who cannot accept a God. In the years I've been here, I have felt that, with its diverse beliefs, this is a home for me. Thank you.
Good morning. All right. I'm just going to start with two very brief readings from Bertrand Russell, mid-20th century British philosopher, mathematician, political activist, and Nobel laureate. First, I ought to call myself an agnostic, but for all practical purposes, I'm an atheist. I do not think the existence of the Christian God any more probable than the existence of the gods of Olympus or Valhalla. In 1952, Russell wrote piece, Is There a God? If I were to suggest that between the Earth and Mars, there is a China teapot revolving around the sun in an elliptical orbit, nobody would be able to disprove my assertion, provided I were careful to add that the teapot is too small to be revealed even by our most powerful telescopes. But if I were to go on to say that since my assertion cannot be disproved, it is an intolerable presumption on the part of human reason to doubt it. I should rightly be thought to be talking nonsense. If, however, the existence of such a teapot were affirmed in the ancient books, taught as the sacred truth every Sunday, and instilled into the minds of children at school, hesitation to believe in its existence would become the mark of eccentricity and entitle the doubter to the attentions of the psychiatrist in an enlightened age and the inquisitor in an earlier time. As for my story, I will say it's a much less rigorous arrival at this thought mindset than Holly or Steve's. For me, it all began with a standard rite of passage, the realization that a jolly old man in a red suit didn't really simultaneously pay a visit to the entire world at the stroke of midnight. In one revelation, a skeptic was born. What else have I misunderstood about this world? As a child, I was sent to CCD, which, as I learned from my research of this story, stands for the Confraternity of Christian Doctrine. For many years, a kind and patient mother of a friend taught our class of all boys in her house after school on Wednesdays. In between devouring devil dogs and playing Manhunt or Mike Tyson's Punch-Out on Sega Genesis, we spent 45 minutes learning about the original Genesis and other assorted stories presented as fact. Looking back, I kind of cringe at the questions I relentlessly asked our well-meaning teacher. Are you sure Jesus really walked on water? Could it have been mistranslated? Why do so many people believe in other religions? How do you know they're all wrong? Are they going to hell? So wait, did God put semen inside of the Virgin Mary, or was it an already formed fetus? As an adult, my skepticism has remained healthy. When my wife Suzanne and I were to get married, our Catholic mothers were kind of appalled at the idea of a friend receiving an online ministerial doctorate, and so we searched around for a place that was kind of a happy medium, and through recommendations of friends came here, and we're really excited to see a coming of age event that we happened to stumble upon, where children were up giving their take on a wide range of spiritual beliefs and seeing in the religious education studies of all types of religions and no dogma. And so we got married here by Jason Seymour, and came periodically for a few years, and then once we moved to Ramsey several years ago, we've been much more regularly attending and very happy to be part of this congregation. In life, I'm honestly mystified by the masses of people who take mythology as fact without bothering to ask for evidence. Given the scientific advances of recent centuries, I cannot believe that our nation's currency bears the slogan, "In God We Trust," or that students are blindly expected to pledge their allegiance to one nation under God. And I get it. You know, there's a strong desire for humans to understand where we came from, what we're doing here, and what it all means. But luckily, in my mind, we have something for that, and that's science. And the best part about science is it's always improving and our knowledge is constantly growing. In the meantime, isn't it enough to enjoy the beauty of this existence that we've all been gifted? You know, to experience a sunset, a thunderstorm, a John Coltrane solo, a skyscraper, an intimate moment, a team effort, wine, and pizza. Sometimes I think about how remarkably improbable it is that I'm standing right here, right now. The existence of our universe, our planet's perfect position in the solar system, our evolution as a species, the right turn that my great-great-great-great-grandfather took one day instead of taking a left, the one sperm out of 100 million that fertilized an egg that became me. When you take a step back and think about how all of us are here under one roof on this frozen surface of a fireball careening through space, it is nothing short of miraculous. Let's celebrate our world and existence together, work to improve the human condition for those less fortunate, and seek to increase our understanding of ourselves through rational observation and evidence. Thank you.
I have to confess, I have been a little nervous about giving this talk. After all, in the United States, non-believers, even though increasing in numbers, are still a much despised minority. We can have a character like the Donald run for president, but the chance that an openly atheist person would be nominated to run for president is as likely as the proverbial snowball surviving in hell, I think. I grew up in a small village in a valley near Heidelberg in Germany. My ancestors were French-speaking Huguenots who had fled brutal persecution in the Spanish Netherlands back in the 16th century. The Calvinist ruler of the Heidelberg region offered refuge to his co-religionists in a 12th century Cistercian monastery that he had dissolved after he had kicked out the monks. The refugees dismantled most of the buildings, but they kept the refectory of the monks and made it their church. It is big and beautiful, and this is where I was baptized and married. About that Huguenot thing, I remember I probably was in seventh grade. My French teacher, you know, went through the rows to hand out the test results, and she stopped at my desk, and she gave me my test back, and it had a D on it. And she looked at me sternly and she said, "You should be ashamed of yourself. This should be second nature to you, being a Huguenot." And I thought, wait a minute, this was 400 years ago. So my parents didn't go to church much, but they sent their children to Sunday school. I had a child's faith, which was strengthened by an experience I had one night when I was nearly a teenager. I had always been very fearful as a child, especially of the dark. When I was 12, we moved to a house up on one of the hills, and the only path home passed through fields and orchards away from the comforting light of street lamps. I remember that I was petrified every time I had to walk home alone after dark. Around this time, my beloved grandfather died. And one night, while walking home, feeling my heart pounding from fear, I stopped and looked at the sky. It was clear, a clear night. The stars were out. And suddenly, I felt like my Opa angel was watching over me from heaven, keeping me safe. I was able to walk home calmly that night and every night after without fear. With strengthened conviction of protection from above, I quickly became a very eager participant in my Sunday school, even teaching there after my confirmation for a couple of years. I was proud to be a Protestant Huguenot. That pride was reinforced both by the awareness that my ancestors had suffered persecution for their faith, and by the fear I saw instilled in some of my Catholic friends. I saw friends terrified that if they did not obey their priest or go to Mass on Sundays, that they would go to purgatory or burn in hell. My sisters and I didn't have such fears. I saw myself then as belonging to the more enlightened faith. Luther was my hero. Standing up to the absolutist authority of the Pope and the Emperor and refusing to recant. We Protestants, we had a direct line to God and didn't need saints to intervene for us. But doubt was already creeping into my professed faith even before I learned that in Calvin's Geneva too, so-called heretics were burnt at the stake in the name of the new Calvinist version of God. And then there was the case of my cousin William, who died of cancer at the age of 23, leaving behind a 2-year-old son. Why did God allow this? About that time, I was probably 15. We were shown a documentary in my high school of the liberation of the concentration camps at Auschwitz. I remember being so shocked and furious and screaming at my parents when I came home. Why did they allow this unspeakable horror, and why did God allow this? I could not believe that they had not known this was happening, and certainly God, if he was truly all-seeing and all-knowing, had to have known, and he had let this happen? I was looking for answers. I read a lot. In high school, my French teacher had us read the French existentialists. She loved them, Sartre and Camus. My religion teacher had us read Spinoza and Kierkegaard so she could argue with us, and she had us read a small volume by the theologian Rudolf Bultmann. It was entitled Jesus Christ and Mythology. It was a revelation for me. Dimly understood at the time, it made me see the Bible as part of human mythology long before Joseph Campbell's The Power of Myth. I studied literature in college. I became interested in the history of ideas and especially the European Enlightenment, growing out of the Renaissance and leading to the American and the French revolutions. By then, the few times I went to church from a sense of obligation, I felt out of place. I mouthed the words, but felt like a fake, because I didn't believe those words anymore. I had no longer faith in the existence of a personal God. I was married in the church by the minister who had baptized me, but only because it was tradition and was expected by my family. Back here in New Jersey, my husband, a nominal Presbyterian, and I tried a couple of churches, but none felt comfortable. Nevertheless, we thought it was really important to read a children's Bible to our kids because so much of our Western culture and art is imbued with these stories. Later, we had them each take the myth, legend, and the Bible class in the Richwood High School for that same reason. It so happened that when my son Ben was a teenager, his best friend took him to his Unitarian youth group one Sunday night. He loved it and asked if he could go back there. I was at first skeptical. I said, Unitarian Universalists? Was that some sort of a cult? I decided to go to one of their Sunday morning services, you know, before he would get sucked in too much into this cult. So to my surprise, I discovered that I liked it. Terry Allen gave an excellent address, and the music was wonderful. To my delight, I discovered that they had music of that caliber every Sunday. That was amazing. In time, I realized that many, if not most, of the people I met there were humanists, agnostics, and even atheists. I remember feeling so relieved that I had stumbled into a place where I did not have to mumble words that made me feel like a hypocrite, and where I didn't have to hide my emerging agnostic atheism. I'm saying emerging, because when I signed the book, I would have shied away from calling myself an atheist. I was on the fence and in the closet. But as my children were both drawn to science, my focus shifted from literature and philosophy to learn more about science and the scientific method myself. I gained a deeper understanding of the phenomena that religion sought to explain. To quote Albert Einstein, "It seems to me that the idea of a personal God is an anthropological concept which I cannot take seriously. I also cannot imagine some will or goal outside the human sphere. Science has been charged with undermining morality, but the charge is unjust. A man's ethical behavior should be based effectually on sympathy, education, and social ties and needs. No religious basis is necessary. Man would indeed be in a poor way if he had to be restrained by fear of punishment and hope of reward after death." That's Albert Einstein. Well, so here I am. This community has now been a home for me for 25 years. I come here not to worship any god or idea or person. I come here for compassionate community. In fact, there are very few places someone like me can go to find community. Believers in God or gods have a huge variety of choices. Unbelievers don't. I'm glad to have found a community that accepts my own personal search and understanding of truth and meaning. It's great to be here with all of you. Thank you.